Welcome to another episode of the Lewis and Kyle Show. I'm pumped to have Kyle Mao joining us today. Kyle, thanks for being here.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. We were discussing beforehand, and I did not realize that I should have asked Kyle if he was okay with having you on the show, seeing as you're the first Kyle we've had, and you know, we haven't had a Lewis yet. So when that happens, okay, That'll be really interesting. I've invited a Lewis before, and he said no. So it's a big deal for us.
What was that?
I don't know. It's either he said no or he didn't even answer. This was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And this was Lewis, co-founder of Sparkloop, Lewis Nichols. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's because I was working at Bitcoin Magazine and I wanted to use Sparkloop for something. So then I wanted to reach out to him for a podcast, and then I don't totally know what happened.
I need to find somebody and publish it after this one.
Yeah, it's only fair.
Well, I didn't even know it was going to be both of you guys, because I just looked at the last couple episodes like an hour ago and it was just you, Lewis. It wasn't two of you.
Well, Kyle was on the Eric Jorgensen episode.
Was he? Okay, I don't know. I just clicked a couple.
I don't make a lasting impact.
Page, so
I've got a full time job. So Lewis likes to record in the middle of the day. He just doesn't like to do episodes with me anymore. That's the reason.
We need someone from Ukraine to manage our calendars to make it easier for the 3-way scheduling.
We can help you with that.
That guy.
Well, I can absolutely help you with that.
Kyle, why don't you give an overview of your companies that you're actively involved with right now?
Yeah, so at the current moment, my main company is Hire UA. It's a recruiting firm that I founded when I was living in Ukraine, where I lived from 2018 to 2022 when the war started. And that's pretty much my big, you know, project at the moment. I'm also working on a software company that will launch alongside that. That's kind of hand in hand with that offer. And then I'm also still a part owner in Cello Olive. There's a bottle on me behind the table there, which is an olive oil company that's based out of Croatia. And then I'm still using my personal brand and my blog and my email list that I established over the course of blogging from 2013, really still to now. And that's what has allowed me to basically launch almost everything I've ever done, honestly, with online business.
What is the software company aiming to do? I'm not familiar with it.
It's going to be in the same kind of recruiting field. So I'm sure you guys know of some of the competitors out there that basically you're able to sign up, post a job, look at applicants. So I am iterating and improving upon everything that is out there in a new region of the world. So should be launching, I'm hoping, around January 1st of this year, give or take.
Exciting. Yeah. Very cool. What specifically about Ukraine talent does the world need to know that they don't know?
The world needs to know that it's out there to begin with. So everybody is always just, you know, virtual assistant from the Philippines or India or wherever else. And I don't think people have realized that Europe is an accessible talent pool. And it's not even just Ukraine. It's like Serbia, it's Croatia, it's Macedonia. It's all these different places that have extremely educated people that are much more, I would say, in tune with Western businesses and Western needs as opposed to some of the other countries. It's not to say that you can't find really good people in those countries, because you certainly can. It's just, there's such a vast number of them that sometimes it's really, really hard to actually filter it down and get what you need when it's such a large haystack to begin with.
How closely aligned are Eastern European business practices and Western business practices?
Highly, because a lot of them, especially the young ones, they want to go work in the West. They've modeled their entire life off of what they see in the West. So there's a huge generational gap, I would say, between like the people who grew up under the Soviet Union times and then those who grew up after that fell. Those who grew up after it fell have such a different outlook. They wanted to learn English at a young age. They grew up on American music or American movies, which, you know, there's some good and there's some bad of that. But they've always kind of realized that there's probably something better beyond what is just here in my country, which has allowed them then to expand their horizons. They learn the language. They understand what the business is. So it's really just this certain generation, I think, that had just perfect times for them to be able to have that curiosity. And it came at a time too when, you know, not to hate on our generation in the States, but I think you guys would probably agree there's a lot of people that are roughly our age who really aren't really wanting to work that hard, or they're looking to do just the bare minimum, or they're far more interested in being an Instagram or a TikTok star than anything else. So it's kind of just been a best of both worlds that has allowed me to say, hey, here's all these great people that are really, really as good, if not better, than the Western people, and they're a hell of a lot cheaper.
It's interesting to me, and like, I understand, you know, how markets work, kind of, I guess, but It's interesting that like these people are so talented, so educated, and yet you can hire them for so much less than you could American talent. And then also the difference in price between hiring a VA from India or any of these other more traditional places and Ukraine, and the Ukrainian be more highly educated, more in tune with Western business practices. Do you think that over time, Ukrainian employees or offshore employees will, the price of them will increase relative to their, I guess, less talented counterpart? And I'm talking over in whole here.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
I mean, we've even seen just since the war started, as people moved out of Ukraine into Europe, like the prices have certainly gone up because Europe's more expensive than being in Ukraine. So I think always there's going to be some ebb and flow of the global markets. I think for the time being, it's always still going to stay cheaper than the West. But certainly, you know, I don't even think people are really paying like a dollar an hour to Indians or Filipinos anymore. I don't think that's sustainable at all on any level. I think that those days have long passed as well. So everything's gotten a lot more expensive in the recent years. But I think the big thing that like business owners in the West don't understand is just how much cheaper it is abroad. Like, I mean, I'll just throw this to you guys. Like, so I have a family, I have a young daughter. I live in a 1500 square foot brand new apartment in a pretty major city. How much do you think I spend a month? Like all my expenses all in.
I'm going to say not including like maybe there's fun things you do for fun, like 3,500.
About 4,000 with all the fun things.
Okay.
And that's like, there's nothing held back at all. You know, that's a very high quality of life. So that's not skimping on anything. That's not really tracking anything. That's not trying to be frugal at all. And that's, you know, top class of life, I would say, not to be, you know, over the top here, but it's pretty high quality of life for that. So when you compare it to what that would cost, say in New York or LA, it would probably be 5, 6, 7 times that at least.
Yeah. I spend like 4K a month just in and out, and I go like once a month.
Yeah.
You know, America's it's
pricey.
It's pricey.
It really is.
Yeah. How did you end up, because you're from San Diego, I believe, or at least spent a lot of the time you spent in the US in San Diego. How did you end up in Ukraine as a digital nomad, if that's the right term for what the guise for what you were doing was when you went there?
It was pretty girls and cheap vodka. That was really what kind of led me to there's nothing more to it than that. I was an engineer.
He's honest.
I lived in, like you said, Southern California, and I wanted something different. So I took a couple trips to Eastern Europe, and then I took a trip to Colombia as well. And while I was there, I was making nearly $100,000 a year, but I had a couple friends I met up with there, and they were making like maybe $800 to $1,000 a month. And I went out with those guys. I lived with them for a couple weeks, and they were so much happier than me, like freelancing, making no money, poor as hell. And they were just so much happier. And I said, what am I doing wrong with my life? So a couple of weeks later, I walked in and I quit. I went all in on online business. And that was, I just wanted to go to Eastern Europe because that was where I felt my calling was. I didn't really want to live in Latin America. I didn't want to live in Asia. So I just went where I felt like I should.
Did you go straight to Ukraine or try a couple of places?
I went to Poland for a while. Then I went to Ukraine. I went to a bunch of other places. And I actually lived in Prague in the Czech Republic for about a year and a half. And then ultimately went back to Ukraine on a permanent basis because I ended up, you know, finding someone who I ended up getting married with, having a kid with. And then it was just like where I felt drawn to. It was the best cost of living. It was the best quality of life. And it was as far removed as I could be from the Western world, which at the time I really wanted to get away from. So, you know, the further I could go, the happier I was going.
And you mentioned hot girls and cheap vodka. For a long time, you were used the moniker Kyle Trouble, and kind of had a, I think that the blog and the email list that you mentioned previously was kind of built on dating tips or kind of like a pickup game. Is that right? Is that an accurate representation?
Yeah, it's all correct. It's all
okay.
Correct.
I'm interested to hear about the transition from kind of, let's call it the manosphere and that being your identity to being married. How have you had to personally evolve in that kind of character shift?
I think I never really enjoyed it as much as a lot of people. Like, I got burnt out of like going out all the time, running around the streets, you know, always on Tinder. To me, it was not a sustainable way I wanted to live my life. And ultimately, I wanted to build a business that made a lot of money. And I didn't feel like a pickup blog was the way to really do that in the long term. It made decent money for a while, but long term, I had to do something else. So for me, it wasn't a terribly tough pivot, but I've also seen what happens with some guys who stay in that scene for a really long time. And, you know, they, some of them end up okay and some of them end up, you know, honestly really screwed up. So, transition wise, it was really not that tough for me because I think I hadn't gone down that far down the rabbit hole for that long where I was able to be like, okay, you know, I'm happy with this. But there's certainly alternative realities where I could have gone down that rabbit hole. I could have enjoyed it more than I did. And, you know, who knows where I would be in that case.
How do you think your pickup skills have influenced your ability to create businesses?
I think the biggest one is sales. Being able to say, hey, no, this girl's not worth the time. I should just move on to someone else. It's exactly the same as sales. There's so many parallels of just saying no, disqualifying, moving on to the next target, you know, having a full pipeline. There's so many parallels between sales and girls that I think about it almost every day. So being able to just immediately see that the same psychological effects worked on people, you know, from a business sense as well as dating was kind of really very helpful, I would say. And that's not even just being on a sales call. That's like when you're doing, say, email marketing, you're building an email list and you're disqualifying people on that. And you're saying, like, if you're the type of person who, you know, counts pennies, you shouldn't be on my email list and trying to buy my products. Just even saying little things like that influences everything then that you do and the way you act and the content you create, the stuff that you publish, and all of that is going to ultimately attract your ideal customer instead of attracting the cheap wads who aren't going to buy anything anyways.
I think that whole space is very interesting, the Manosphere and the Red Hill universe, because I think there's a lot of good that comes from it. And then obviously lots of, like you said, has its downsides. That's like any cultural movement, right? There's like some kernel of ways in which they're genuinely, undeniably helping a lot of people lead better lives. And there's some other stuff going on as well. Kind of being somewhat removed from it now, what would you say are like 2 to 3, maybe sales skills would be good, right? Just generally increases your confidence as a person. Like genuinely good takeaways from that universe. Like, yeah.
Have standards. Right. Because I think there's way too many like guys in the US now who just have no standards.
100%.
Be willing to say no. And I mean, yeah, I would say those are the big ones. Like guys in the US now, I see it every time I go back, just, you know, you see like a really successful dude and you see who he's with and you're like, man, you could be doing a lot better in your life. Oh, maybe you're very successful. Maybe you've got it together, but you know, first impressions matter. And I think that those are the big ones for sure.
February of 22, I think is when everything kicked off. And I listened to the podcast where you talked about that experience, and obviously it was personally difficult and you know, a hard thing to go through. And I sympathize with that. So I want to be careful with how I approach a question about the ongoing war. But you are, you know, very close to a lot of people who have information that's kind of, you know, grassroots or like the real stuff. Can you kind of tell us what your perception of where things are at today? If you prefer to talk about it, or if not, it's fine too.
So actual intel from people who have actually held a gun on those fields is that they've lost a shitload of people on both sides, 70% to 80% of what they started with.
Wow.
You know, almost 2 years later, the actual boundaries of the regions have not changed, like at all. If you look at the map before, look at it now, not much is different. Russia has said we claim a few territories, but they don't have full control of them. And honestly, it's been just 2 years of bloodshed for absolutely nothing gained. So that's the, as far as I know, the real story on the ground is basically a stalemate at this point. No one's really winning. No one's really losing. The only people who, well, some people are winning and some people are losing. The people who are winning are the ones who are, you know, sending the guns over and own the stocks of the gun companies and the politicians. And then people who are losing are, of course, the actual people in Ukraine who don't have any grasp usually of even just the Western politics and how much war involved, probably.
The flower of Ukrainian youth. Yeah, it's insane. Would you say that the general sentiment of the people is just wanting to be, you know, at peace?
I would say now it's gone so bad that they want blood. They want revenge. It's a very slippery slope. I would say that when it all started, of course, it was, you know, let's go get them, you know, bloodshed, you know, screw them. And there's been a lot of families, you know, there's people that have families, part of them in Russia. And those families are now totally split apart. You know, they're not on speaking terms now because why would they be? But I think as it's gone on too, I've seen it that like some of the guys I know, whether they're my family or they're just friends that I know, they've gone from like rah rah to just being beaten down by it because they can't leave the country. So they're stuck in the country. They can't leave because martial law, 18 to 60 year old men can't leave Ukraine. So they're all stuck there. They have no economic upward movement at all because the economy is in tatters and they don't know like what they can do with their lives. They're just stuck there. So it's gone from like, let's get them to just like, you know, borderline just miserable thoughts. Like they're just unhappy. Like what can they do? So that's kind of how it shifted, I would say.
I think that plays into a lot of what motivates you to make your company successful, right? Because it's not just like, you know, what has to happen for the company to be successful is that lots of people in Ukraine are gainfully employed by, doesn't have to be an international company, but I mean, I think that's mainly you're serving as people because people in Ukraine don't have, you're not any better at hiring Ukrainians than probably companies based in Ukraine, but you're a whole lot better at it than pretty much everyone else.
Yeah, I would say that it's a nice mission to have, that knowing that we're helping good people who are stuck in crappy situations, and we're also helping business owners on the other side who, since COVID, have really kind of also been in crappy situations where they can't actually hire the help that they need. So I like to think of it as like, ideally, everybody's winning. But like you were saying, it's nice to help people. And like you said, the more people that we can help, the more people we employ, obviously, the more money that my company makes. So it's winning three ways, we could say.
Yeah. I want to address, it's a small thing, but you know, Alex from Client Ascension, I think his name's Alex. If I screw that up, I'd be real embarrassed. But I know he's hired software engineers from your company. He's the guy from Ohio.
Yeah, Alex. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And like we've used the term VA, but it is a lot more than just like, it's not just admin employees, right? What are a few of the more, I don't want to say success story, because I think that might be a limited version of the question, but like, what are the most sophisticated and like how involved have you become in a company? Because it's like, great, you know, this podcast editor, let's say that's a very commoditized role, that you could hire one in the Philippines or you could hire one in Ukraine and there's some benefits, but like, where have you really stepped into a company and like put, I mean, even in your own potentially would be an interesting case study to discuss like the levels of senior management and decision-making authority that are made by your employees from your own pipeline.
There's like three that kind of jump out to me. So the first one is an agency that's like local business marketing agency who have filled out their entire team with Ukrainians, like five of them, to the point where they've now said like, we want to buy them all out. And they all, it's like they're a hub and they speak Ukrainian. They've got one person in charge who's the liaison between the executive team and that department. And they've got the whole department now that does all the work. Another one would be a e-commerce like food company. I'm not going to drop the name obviously, but they've hired now five editors and an animator from us. So their whole creative team now is all, you know, Ukrainians basically churning out the videos that they need. And then my own team, myself, obviously being able to build the team up from two people in February 2022 to now almost 20. Obviously, I've got a lot more on my plate. I'm a lot busier now. And I think what has really been the big difference for a lot of businesses is the people that we've been able to place who actually are decision makers. Like, you know, my executive assistant who runs my calendar and schedules everything for me, you know, who planned the whole meeting. We all went to Warsaw and Poland this summer, like 10 of us planned all of that. It's so much more, like you said, than just a, hey, you're a VA. I'm going to ask you to go on Apollo and scrape lists for like 3 hours. It's the people we're placing are so much more capable of so much more than that. That it's not just someone who just does tasks. It's someone who can actually integrate into your business and actually really, truly make a difference long term.
What are your ambitions with the company? Maybe, you know, we're recording this November of 2023. Where would you like to see maybe end of next year? Do you have like a longer term vision for what this could turn into? Like expanding beyond Ukraine or just like absolutely being the category king for bringing Ukrainian talents, remote jobs from American companies? Like what do you see big picture this turning into?
Big picture, I think it can be all of Eastern Europe because a lot of other countries also have really good talent. And we've actually started wading into that a little bit. So we've started sourcing from other countries just to see what's out there and had actually very positive results. So I think with my ties to Ukraine and I have, you know, local culture, local language skills a lot more, I don't think my team will be anything but Ukrainian, to be honest, but I see us expanding into the region. The software company will cover more than Ukraine. And I think long term, I would like to be the undisputed, like you said, king of this region of the world. And I think this region is, it's untapped. Like no one's really done this. You know, there's lots of people that know all about the Philippines and lots of people that know all about India, but there's not a lot of people that have really done this at a high level before. So I think that's the sky's the limit, and that's where I'm hoping to take it in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's a noble goal. My girlfriend is in recruiting. She works for a company called Insight Global. And it's just, you know, it's such a value add position to be getting somebody a job. You know, it's a lot of goodwill you create, and then giving a business owner a really good employee. There's just so much goodwill being in that position. I think, you know, one thing that is interesting to me is that you kind of have to train the business owner on how to hire and train effectively and correctly in order to make the investment worth it. Because it's not like, you know, hiring someone who's sitting next to you. It's just something that a lot of business owners haven't done before. I guess, you know, people are more and more comfortable with it after COVID. But what would you say are like the, you know, the things that the people who do well with hiring outsourced talent, what are the things that you've seen make them very successful at doing that? If that question makes sense.
It does. I think the big thing is that you never want to hire somebody and then you have a new job, which is giving them work and coming up with things for them to do. And I think that's what a lot of early hire business owners who are hiring too soon end up doing. So the most successful ones are usually established companies that have SOPs. They have specific KPIs. They have very specific things of what they want this person to do. And then they put that person in and they either can make it or they can't. The people who come and say like, oh, I want someone to do this and this and this, and I want to get my time back. And I say, look, but what do you want them to do for you to get your time back? If they can't answer that question, then it gets stickier. There are positions that, like, you know, my executive assistant, her entire job is to save me time and to be the barrier between everybody else who wants my time and wants my attention. But that's a very also specific role. It's like, get in front of everything, respond to every message you can, streamline the information, and ask, you know, come with solutions for the things that you can't solve on your own. But I think a lot of business owners are just hoping that they'll just hire a lead generator who will then bring in business. But if you don't already have a way that's bringing in business and bringing in leads, and you can't plug someone into that system, unless you're hiring someone really, really high level, there's no way they're going to just figure that out for you. And someone who can just figure that out, like, they're running their own company, honestly. So I think that's kind of how I would sum that up. But I have one question I want to ask you is, with your girlfriend in recruiting, what is the overall, like, her opinion of things in the States right now? Because I'm assuming she's sourcing domestically. Yeah. Like, what's it like there for her?
Well, I don't want to speak for her, and she only started 2-3 months ago. I graduated from school 2 years ago. She graduated in May. And so I don't know if she would have kind of a macro picture take. And it's localized to Alabama. And she's mostly working right now in, like, not service industry, but like technician roles, like shipbuilding, that kind of thing. And so
very niche.
I think they're pretty siloed. So
we haven't talked much about olive oil yet. I feel like I had one other thing I wanted to get to. on the staff. I feel like I had one other thing on the staffing side. Oh, I did. We kind of glossed over, right, the growth from 2 employees to 20 employees. And I don't know if you said that was 1 year or 2 years. What have you done? I know. Yeah, that's a lot. That's dramatic, in my opinion. Not in a bad way, just like good for you. How did you...
Good and bad ways.
Yeah, right? I think the executive assistant is a big part of that. But in terms of the demand growth, I mean, it's like an impressive outcome. What do you attribute the success of that to? I know, right, how we met through Client Ascension. And so I think, you know, implementing a lot of their curriculum might have a lot to do with it. But are there other things you attribute this hyper growth to in terms of your strategy or positioning or good timing? How have you grown so quick?
Honestly, a lot of it was just in a position of almost desperation. I think I had to figure it out, because when the war kicked off, the company was starting to grow, was starting to get some traction. And then it just, like, all of a sudden the whole world came crashing down, and I had a lot of stuff that went on. Like, you know, I moved from Ukraine. I went back to California. My wife was pregnant, expecting our first kid. So it was like, I just got to figure this shit out. And obviously, you know, I have other stuff going on about the other companies, but this is the one that was seeing the most growth and has the most potential. So what am I going to do? Client Ascension was a huge snowball, just getting in that group and being able to actually do a lot of placements within that group and then get some word of mouth was really helpful. I cracked Twitter ads last year, and I think I was like one of the very few people who was really truly successfully running Twitter ads. That's totally fallen apart now because they've changed and screwed up everything on that platform, but that was a big catalyst. And then I think just the speed that we are doing it and the people that we are finding in a lot of cases, you know, we're finding people within like 5 days. Whereas when I talk to people in the States, they're like, we're lucky if an American recruiting agency gives us like a candidate within 3 months. That's how much different it is. So, you know, my team's trained, like, be responsive. Customer service and client service is like the one thing that we control. Respond quickly, show that you care. And that's like, it's such a differentiator between us and everybody else that I think I would attribute a lot of it to just the team and the way they've been able to pick up on everything that I've kind of passed on and trained them with and been able to implement that at scale. I really would say they deserve a huge amount of the credit for being able to, one, free up my time to go get more business and then actually be able to sustain that fulfillment as we've gotten bigger.
And Twitter ads were a big one. That's kind of what I've been, you know, I'm into Client Ascension as well. And, you know, recently started a new offer as well. And it's finally working quite well on cold email, which is cool. But I feel like one of my big priorities is to find one paid channel that can get like a reasonable cost per meeting and like get my first paid channel that has a, yeah, like reasonable cost for meeting and then see how that can go. Probably not Twitter at first, but I mean, Twitter could be, I don't know. Gotta think about it. Have you tried redirecting your ad spend elsewhere now that Twitter's fallen apart, or now you kind of enough snowball from the size and reputation and repeat business?
Enough snowball. We tried Facebook like lead gen ads for a while, and unfortunately that did not work very well. I mean, we got calls, but no matter how many things you put, like, we don't place commission only people in big red flashing font, you still get people who book a call and say, oh, I want a commission only cold caller. Or you say like, we are looking for clients. If you are an employee, do not apply. And we get, you know, freaking Filipino and Indian VAs applying, you know, in bulk booking calls, like 10, 20 of them. So then of course the algo's all screwed up because it's like, oh, these are the people that are booking calls, so we're going to send more of them. And it's just this, Facebook, honestly, did not work out very well. But other than that, no, I haven't really been able to crack another channel. I'd really like to, though, because I'm in the same boat as you. Like, being able to know exactly how much you put in, how much you get out of it is really helpful as a business owner, obviously.
What has changed with Twitter? I mean, obviously, Elon bought it. And but is there some specific thing that you're dealing with?
Might be the what hasn't changed.
Good. It was never very good to begin with. But for a while, it was working. And then their attribution has just, like, you can't tell what is from paid ads and what's from organic. So you have to use it in conjunction. You have to be creating content, tweeting, threads, videos, everything else, and then running paid ads. But if someone clicks an organic tweet and books a call, it doesn't attribute it to the ad necessarily. They're just, the whole system and the way they've done everything is not, it wasn't built from the ground up properly. So it's really hard as a small business owner to justify when you can't really calculate what you're paying for a call in that case.
Let's talk about the olive oil. What's the origin of your involvement in the olive oil company?
So that goes back to the dating blog. I had a friend who lived in Prague. He was a longtime reader of the dating blog. His name is Martin. And he basically had olive oil from a family farm in Croatia and said, I need help getting it to market. So he basically came to me and said, let's, you know, be partners on this. And he was living in Prague at the time. He ended up moving home to Canada. We shipped our first container of oil, about 1,000 liters, to his garage. And then we actually sold the first 1,000 bottles on Twitter on a webinar. So I
built a webinar. Nice.
A webinar. So it started off, I was running at the time a program about niche websites. So I had built like 20 successful niche websites, was making pretty good money from them. So I started a coaching group about that, where I basically sold like pre-built sites and I gave away olive oil as a bonus. And then that worked really well. So we did a whole webinar about olive oil. And then we sold enough that I had to go to Canada and help him bottle them in the garage. And it was completely against all food and, you know, drug administration regulations, I'm sure. And we broke every law in the book, but we got them all shipped out. We got it all working. And now, of course, it's a, you know, much better oiled machine, no pun intended, where it's all shipped straight to a bottling facility in California, and then it goes to the packing facility in Chicago area and out to customers. But that's the story. And it's physical product businesses are tough, though. I'll tell you, they like margins are
a liquid, especially because of the weight to value ratio.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even a refrigerated product. Like, imagine being a refrigerated product.
Oh, yeah.
Just how expensive it is for that kind of space. Yeah, it's a really, really tough business. I really wouldn't recommend anyone get into it unless you have someone who's handling all that for you. So basically, like, drop shipping, you know, that's a much, much easier way to go about it than actually building your own product and brand from scratch.
And it's primarily B2C on the internet.
Yeah.
Have you guys done any, on the internet, have you done any retail channels at all?
A couple of very small mom and pop shops, but not, it's unfortunately they don't have enough trees to do enough scale for actual like supermarkets. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's going to be a long time before it's at that case. So in order to do that, we'd have to start buying from other vendors in the region, but then we'd be mixing and we don't necessarily know, you know, unless they give us just the raw olives, we're not exactly sure what could be in it. So at least if we keep it within his family's mm-hmm. facilities, we know exactly what's in it. And then we can just sell.
I like that. You know, yeah,
the harvest itself. But it's, you know, it's a boutique business. It's
what do you think?
It's never going to be mainstream.
Well, it feels like olive oil has been identified by, it seems like there's a lot of innovation in like the marketing of olive oil over the last couple of years, from you know plastic bottles, just branding in general. What do you take of that? Like, it's interesting to see a category be, it's almost like private equity eyes mm-hmm. without it being private equity.
I'd say the big change was that people started waking up to canola and seed and vegetable oils. So that was the first thing, was that they needed to immediately differentiate themselves from the containers that those were in. So all of a sudden people started realizing, oh, maybe this stuff's not so great. So then of course, olive oil, if you had the real stuff, needed to start becoming a little bit higher end so that it didn't look like the exact same stuff on the other side of the shelf. So that was probably what kind of kicked it off. But I think that trend is still very, like almost, you know, we're going to go back to like red pill and manosphere, you know, like Twitter, health gurus, you know, science bros. It's still pretty niche. I think people maybe are, you know, like some people in my family know like, oh, I shouldn't have canola oil anymore. So people are starting to wake up, but it's for a long time been very niche, very internet kind of centric, focused on that, you know, seed oils are bad for you, seed oils memes, you know, don't. And, you know, some of those guys are just insane too. They go to the restaurants and they're like, I'd like to see your whole menu. Does any of this have seed oils? And, you know, there's one way to live your life, but I think some people take it a little too far.
Yeah, we have Seed Oil Disrespector on the podcast.
Yep. Okay.
Like a year and a half ago. So the frog himself, the man frog.
Yeah.
What specifically, I want to ask the artisan questions. Like, why would I buy this olive oil over another olive oil? If you're not the artisan expert.
To be honest, I'm not really the expert compared to Martin. He'd be the better person to ask that. But I can tell you it is the real stuff and it burns. So, you know, it is the real stuff. Other than that, I mean, honestly, it's just, it comes down to, at that point, branding and story, you know? So this does have a good story. It's got like real roots. So is it, I don't know. It's hard to say. I'm probably not the best one to answer that question, to be honest.
You're not the technician. I met someone Friday night.
I'm not.
What was he doing? He was like a weed engineer. I was like, so random. I was like, what do you do? He's like, I work in a lab and I make strains of weed. And I'm like with your hands. He's like, I literally extract the oils and invent new weed every day. I'm like, cool. But that's not you at this company. Cool.
That is not me at this company.
Fair enough.
No, that would be Martin.
What would you say, as an operator, your biggest strengths are?
Getting the best out of people, honestly. I don't know. And especially overseas, I think it's really hard sometimes to get the best out of people with a different culture, a different language, and then, you know, through a screen as well. So I think being able to reach people and get them to perform at a high level is probably my biggest strength. But it's also can be my biggest weakness at times, just keeping people on too long who probably aren't the best fit, trying to fix it, trying to help them improve. Like, there's definitely been times where I'm like, I should cut the cord, but I'll give them one more chance. So it's one of those things where if the person's wired right, my strength then is allows me to get a lot, but it's also going to be a downfall of mine too, I would say.
In terms of
go for it, Kyle.
In terms of your internet lists, like the email list that you've built, and the ability to leverage that for your existing businesses and the opportunities that you create in the future, would, if you were to like start over, would you build a email list again?
What year am I starting? Am I starting now or I'm starting 10 years ago?
You're like, starting today.
Hell of a lot harder now.
You're starting today.
There's so much. Okay. Yes, but there's so much more noise now. So back in 2013, when I was blogging, if you published quality posts and tried to rank them in Google and then put a pop-up, you could rank in Google, you could get 1,000 hits a month on the article, and you can convert that pop-up at 3 to 5% because people were not so oversaturated with email lists and offers and content. And it is so much more difficult now. So I don't even know what I would do now. I'd have to really sit down and think about it. But I think at the current moment, everyone is just on social media making noise, hoping they get noticed instead of focusing on quality. So I think there's still a market for quality content, but you have to really make good front end stuff to actually even get noticed these days. And that's what's so difficult about it. But once you own the list and they're on your list, you have them. It can't be taken away from you. And it's far more direct at that point. And I still think that if you can build that list, it's one of the most effective ways to sell, but it's actually getting the eyeballs on it to begin with that is way tougher than it was 10 years ago.
I'm going to ask a very Kyle Bishop type question. Do you plan to buy property in Poland? Do you plan to like get dual citizenship? What are kind of the longer term logistical plans? Sony seems pretty committed to the European lifestyle.
I own two properties in Ukraine, which are obviously not in use. So I probably will not buy more in this region until that war is done. That's kind of the way I'm feeling about it, because I already own a couple that are, you know, pretty much underwater, so to speak. As far as dual citizenship, I've been working on getting Italian citizenship as a second citizenship for longer than I would care to admit. It's a very long and frustrating process. And then, yeah, there's routes in Poland and other countries as well, if you're willing to actually permanently expatriate to these places, that allow you to get a permanent residence permit, allow you to, you know, get a citizenship. And I'm happy to go into details about that as well. But yeah, definitely in the cards.
So you don't think the US is really like, you plan to raise your kids in Europe and everything?
The US is better for business. If I could somehow do business in the US and have the same life and enjoyment that I do here, I would certainly consider it. The internet's allowed me to kind of have a lot of both, which is good. But no, I'm quite comfortable sending my kids to school here. I think it's far better suited for their future. I would much prefer to live here. There's certainly things I do miss about the US, but that, you know, it's, life is all about trade-offs. And I think that's a trade-off I'm willing to make at this point, but I can't see myself raising kids in the US, to be honest. It's just, I don't see it. It's not a fit for me.
For the property that you own in Ukraine, and obviously I don't know the details of it, but like, are lenders still collecting mortgage payments? Like, what is the state of the economy? Have things just been frozen? I mean, people, you know, it was like a diaspora. People went everywhere. I guess, how is that for you personally? And then is that the same across the board?
I would say it's bounced back. Obviously, when it first happened, everything was pretty bad shape. I would say the rental and actually even the buying market are pretty strong right now. They really didn't fall off that much, like dipped quickly and bounced almost back up to the same. It's the jobs. Like, if you don't speak English and you can't go work abroad, or if you're a man who's stuck there, like your possibilities of upward movement are just so slim because companies there don't have, it's so uncertain. They don't have money to innovate and grow. They're just kind of stuck treading water as well. So, you know, let's say you're a 30-year-old man and you're an engineer and you've been at a company paying you $800 a month for full-time work. Well, you might be able to move to a company that pays you $900 or $1,000, but you're probably not getting much beyond that, to be honest, unless you speak really good English, can get a remote job in the country. It's like you're just kind of locked in, I would say, unless you have some sort of skill or language that allows you to take a step outside. But then you've got the actual law that says you can't physically leave, but then puts you right back in. So it's a it's a really tough situation for them. I wish there was something I could do on a bigger level to help.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, when you say stuff like that, it's like, you know, $2,000 per month full-time wage to someone, $2,000 US full-time wage to someone in that country is just a great opportunity.
Yeah, that's literally like more than double what they're going to make otherwise. And everybody lives so differently too. Like, it's very common when people get married that they get an apartment from the families pool money and they buy them a small little apartment, but it's enough. It may not be like a McMansion like you'd see in the States. It may only be a 700 square foot apartment where they stay for 10 years. It may be totally beaten down, but they don't have a mortgage and they don't have a car and they don't have all the other costs. So then you factor all that stuff in. It's like they're actually living higher quality of life and they have more disposable income than a lot of people do in the US.
So interesting. I just think
very different world.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like kind of, again, it's all trade-offs, but it's definitely one of those things that drives me a bit crazy when I'm like these interesting, I don't want to say like arbitrage because that's totally not the right word for it, but these just big opportunities to not take advantage of them, like, does drive me a little crazy. But I don't necessarily have a specific thing I would do with it yet. It's like, I don't have that. If I was to hire someone right now, it would be like creating the job for myself because what do I have for this person? That's a goal, right? It's like the company is mature enough where there's a repeatable scope of work where it's like, okay, now you're very definitively in charge of a real thing that'll keep you busy. But the opportunities when you're mature in your company are just so exciting.
Yeah. And I think the big opportunity is just being able to build out an entire team abroad. And, you know, maybe you don't want to move to Eastern Europe, but a few trips a year, you know, shake hands, meet faces, and it can make just this world of difference where they could all be together in a hub and getting stuff done while you're sitting on the beach sipping a margarita, honestly.
Is there anything other than client ascension that you say has been a big accelerator in kind of your business career recently?
With the agency?
With the agency or just any other kind of investments you've made that maybe at the outset seems expensive and then kind of have paid off tremendously?
Not particularly as far as like a coaching program or networking, nothing that actually, honestly, to give those guys props, that's probably been the best like coaching program I've ever invested in by far. I've invested in a few others and a few other agencies that have come up very short. So I should honestly give huge props to those guys at CA because they do a good job of getting results, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, Andre's coming to Arizona in a couple of weeks and we're going to book out some studio space. I'm going to interview him in person, which will be cool.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah. Andre's
so that'll be good.
Nothing but good things to say about him.
Yeah. We met in person this year at Funnel Hacking Live and then he's just come to Arizona for some other conference.
Good stuff.
But very cool. I don't know if I have any other final questions, Kyle. Anything from you?
What's the food like in Poland? Is it a restaurant culture? Like, do you go out to eat? I mean, I know it's a big city.
I just imagine Choland for every meal, but that's probably not right.
So I live in a smaller city, like second tier city. I would say Warsaw, definitely food wise, restaurant wise, is much more of a going out culture. But Warsaw, like you can get just about anything, mm-hmm. of any cuisine at a high level. I mean, you might have to pay for it, but I would say, yeah, for sure. And in Ukraine, Kiev was insanely good for restaurants. I would say like quality for what you would get. You could go eat like a Michelin starred meal, you know, for two of you with bottles of wine for under $100, like insanely good. I miss having that kind of scene, but yeah, I would say in the summertime, especially like, you know, right now it's almost freezing cold. It's rainy. So there's not a lot of people that are going out, but in the summer, like every restaurant, every patio, every terrace will be totally filled, you know. In the second tier city, I would say the quality, I'd give it like a 7 or 8 out of 10 in most cases. But the capital cities that are truly westernized, I mean, those are solid 10 of 10s. And it's just that everybody can walk. So everybody gets ready at 6 o'clock. They walk to dinner. They sit there from 7 to 9, 7 to 10. And then they walk to the club or they walk to the next bar and they walk or they take an Uber for $2. It's so different than the States where it's like, I'm going to go get in my car and drive to the restaurant and then I have to drive my car to the bar after, and you just, you know, it's so much more accessible here. It makes all the difference in the world, truly.
Mm-hmm. This is my last question. Are you planning to return to Kyiv when you're able, or have you not made that plan yet?
No, to visit if the war stopped, I would, but I think as far as raising kids, like I don't really want to live in a place where, you know, we go out to go have a picnic in the forest and I've got to worry about like a landmine being buried underneath a rock. It's just not a world I want to live in. It's not a world I want my children to be around. So I think I'll have to probably pass on that. And I think from a perspective of just moving on, I had to almost be like, okay, this part of my life is, this chapter is closed, in order to move on and say, hey, you know, it's time to just do the next thing and not worry about what happens. So I think that's part of it too, is when I was sitting on that border waiting to go out, I was already like, if this is the last time I'm here, then it's the last time I'm here and I'm okay with it. And I think that was necessary for me to then move on to the next part of my life for sure.
All right, this will be my final question. What would you say to the American who's like interested in Eastern Europe and that lifestyle? It's like, is it for you, or it's only for you if you kind of have these niche characteristics? Like, what's your take for other people? Like, do it, don't do it. Actually, Latin America's great and I'm just weird that I don't like it. Or
my advice would be, if you have any pull towards anywhere in the world and you want to see if it's a fit for you to maybe actually move abroad, go where you want to go for 2 weeks and you'll know. That's it. You go for 2 weeks, you do everything you want to do, whether it's going out, whether it's tourist stuff, go live like a localish person for 2 weeks and you'll figure out what you really want. That's really all it takes. You'll either at that point know that you want to make the move, or you'll know it's not for you. And if you then want to make the move, you'll probably spend the rest of your life trying to get there or wishing that you were going to work on getting there.
I like that. Just show up and see for yourself. Kyle, what types of companies?
Too.
Yeah. It's not that much.
Yeah.
And they have internet, hopefully. So you can, you know, maybe take a half remote or whatever. But what types of companies should be reaching out to you? You're on Twitter. I think it's just hire-uway, or did you get hireuway.com?
Hire-uway.com, or okay. Just Kyle Mao on Twitter if you are interested. Yeah, we like basically small, medium businesses usually that have hired before. So 2 to 25 employees, you know, that are doing well, have some processes and have work for people to do. If that's you, then probably a great fit for us.
Amazing. And thanks so much for coming on the show. And
thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Good stuff. Yeah.